February 6th. Where did January go? How can it be February? Would life slow down if I weren't so busy? That's a question I may never have a chance to answer. We had Guild last night. I almost skipped it, but Sheila was going for the first time in months, and I'd skipped the Christmas party in December, so I felt like I should go. On top of all that, the speaker was Becca Fenstermaker, who I enjoyed a lot when we had her a couple of years ago. Last night, she lectured on finding your quilting flow and finishing up UFOs. I left the meeting inspired to finish the quilts I started last year and then sort of let drop by the wayside. Admittedly, I wasn't entirely happy to be at the meeting. I still have some bitterness about last year's Guild show when my cute little improv quilt was hung in an out-of-the-way corner. And in November, Marianne Knight was elected Guild president, if you can believe that. Still, I can't let a few people spoil a group I've belonged to for years and really enjoyed. Anyway, Becca's presentation was great, and there were a lot of fantastic show-and-tell quilts. Even though our guild leans strongly traditional, some of us are clearly into modern fabrics. Susan Pennypacker showed the most gorgeous Drunkard's Path quilt made with white and pink fabric, and the pink, on closer inspection, turned out to be a print with tiny cowboy boots and horses and moons and stars. "It's Dreamland Flamingo from Ruby Star Society," she reported when everyone oohed and awed. "I ordered it from Fat Quarter Shop online." "Sheila carries Ruby Star," I called out, always happy to shill for Thimble Pleasures. "And if you don't want to drive downtown to pick it up, she'll ship it to you for a $5 flat rate." Susan's eyes widened. "I had no idea you were carrying Ruby Star, Sheila." Sheila shrugged modestly. "I carry just about everything, and if I don't have what you're looking for, I'll order it."
"Is this show and tell or a commercial for Thimble Pleasures?" Marianne Knight grumbled loudly enough for everyone to hear.
Susan turned to Marianne and said, "I think it's great to support local businesses, especially when they're owned by our fellow guild members." I've always liked Susan Pennypacker, and now I like her even more. In fact, I like almost everyone I know in the Peacemakers. It's just that one group of troublemakers that makes me wonder if I should switch to the Evening Stars. Sheila says she doesn't want to switch.
"Every group has its Marianne Knight," she said last night as we drove home after the meeting. "Better to stick with the Marianne Knight you know. The Evening Stars version might be even worse."
I'll have to ask the Evening Star girls and the So Sisters who their most awful member is. Speaking of the So Sisters, this month's BOM block is a rocky road to Kansas. I haven't done paper piecing in ages. Clearly, I'm going to have to sit down in front of YouTube and watch some how-to videos to remind myself what to do. How did people learn anything before YouTube was invented? February 12th. I realized this morning that I haven't written anything here about my research into the life of Maisie Baker McGrath. She's such an interesting person, with ties to all of Milton Falls' more famous quilters, including Florence and Emmeline Grangerfield. Everyone knows about the Grangerfields, of course, since they're one of Milton Falls' oldest families, and there's been a lot written about sisters-in-law Florence and Emmeline, who were both famous in their day. There was even a documentary done by WOSU, the Columbus PBS affiliate, Ohio Stars, the Quilters of Milton Falls, Ohio.
Maisie Baker McGrath is the niece of Eula Baker, who played an important but somewhat less flashy role in Milton Falls quilt history. She taught quilting classes for years in Building No. 5, home of the Milton Falls Quilting Company, which later became simply the Quilting Company, and wrote two books published in the 1940s, Aunt Eula's Quilt Making Basics and Aunt Eula's Pies, Cakes, and Quilts, both published by the Quilting Company Press. Sheila's grandmother learned to quilt from Eula Baker in the mid-1930s. I spent an entire afternoon last week on newspapers.com searching for articles about Maisie McGrath. There weren't a ton, but there were enough to get the bare bones of a biography. I know, for instance, that Maisie was a WAC during World War II, serving as a mail clerk at Fort Hancock in New Jersey, which is where she met her husband-to-be, Owen McGrath, who, as it turned out, was also from Central Ohio. She and Owen were married at St. Luke's in 1945 by a Reverend Joseph Mayfield, who came out of retirement to perform the ceremony. Maisie was a member of the Milton Falls Quilters Association, which was formed in 1946 as a service organization. Her name pops up in relation to the MFQA over the years. They did a lot of fundraising for all sorts of causes, but I couldn't find any mention of the group after 1958. From the 1960s until the mid-1970s, the only time Maisie's name comes up is in the obituaries for various relatives. So-and-so is survived by. And a few times when her quilts won prizes at the state and county fairs. But beginning in the 1970s, Maisie became a star. Okay, at the very least, she became a minor quilting celebrity. Part of this is because her quilts started winning awards at Paducah and the International Quilt Festival in Houston. It's also because of the big quilt revival that started up around the time of the bicentennial. For years, no one in Milton Falls had any idea that this town was once the heart of American quilt making. I remember taking a field trip in sixth grade, so around 1969 or 1970, to the Purefoy Industries complex on George Road. The name made it sound like we were going to some huge factory, so it was quite a surprise that the so-called complex was just those old mill buildings by the river. At the time, there wasn't much out there. It wasn't until the 1990s that things started to revive in downtown Milton Falls and that the new downtown development started spreading out in the direction of the river. Anyway, I don't remember much about that field trip, so maybe my teacher mentioned the quilting company. I don't recall. But there were other historic sites around town that every elementary school kid knew about. The bench where Ulysses S. Grant once sat one afternoon in 1859, the house where abolitionist John Brown slept in on his way to Columbus, and the home of the Milton Falls Quilting Company, Milton Falls' first woman-owned business, wasn't one of them. However, by the mid-1970s, the national craze for quilt making hit Milton Falls hard, and suddenly people like Sheila's grandmother and Maisie Baker were urging the town leaders to include the Milton Falls Quilting Company in their bicentennial plans. In late 1975, Maisie and Sheila's grandmother, who I always knew as Nana Coulter, but whose real name was Shirley, were picked to head a steering committee to plan the bicentennial celebration of quilts. All of that's interesting to me, but I haven't gotten my hands on the most interesting thing yet. In 1993, In Their Own Voices, Ohio Quilters Tell Their Stories, was published by the University of Ohio Press. It's out of print now, and the cheapest used copy costs $175. So, I've made an interlibrary loan request. Why? Because one of the contributors is our own Maisie Baker McGrath, of course. When I told Daryl about what I was learning in all of my research, he laughed and said, "You're going to be falling down rabbit hole after rabbit hole. I'll never see you again." Actually, he's about to be seeing a whole lot of me. Next week is QuiltCon in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we're driving. That's 7.5 hours of togetherness. I can't wait. February 15th. How do you celebrate Valentine's Day with your beloved when you've been married for 40 years? Why, you go to a preschool Valentine's Day party, of course. It was a last-minute invite, and the only reason we were invited is that Sam is traveling on business and Jessica woke up yesterday morning with a cold. She said she felt well enough to go, but not psychologically strong enough to bear up under the terrible looks she'd get from all of the other adults when she started sneezing in the middle of the Valentine's Day play, "Love is for Everyone, Especially Kangaroos." Let me report that "Love is for Everyone, Especially Kangaroos" was one of the best plays I've ever seen. First of all, it was mercifully short, 6 minutes with no intermission. And it was truly funny, mostly because it involved a dozen plus toddlers jumping back and forth with giant felt hearts pinned to their shirts. Was there a plot? None that I could discern, but who needs a plot when you've got a love story about kangaroos? Some might say that's a situation in which plots might be best avoided. Fortunately, Tyler and Taylor's preschool has a solid no sugar ever policy, so while the boys were excited at the end of the party, they weren't out of control. We took them to Chick-fil-A for lunch, where I ate most of their waffle fries when they weren't looking. And there was this wonderful moment when the boys started recapping the play to one another, where Daryl and I looked at each other across the table and smiled. It was so romantic. Sure, the table was littered with napkins and ketchup gone amok, and we knew it was only a matter of time until the boys had their daily pre-nap meltdown. But that was okay. And yeah, we knew that we'd probably end up ordering pizza for dinner, both of us too exhausted to cook, and that we'd watch Jeopardy while we ate, and then Daryl would fall asleep in his recliner and I'd zonk out on the couch. No diamonds or roses would be exchanged. We'd drag ourselves to bed, frumpy and dumpy, and happy because we still loved each other after all these years. As it turns out, while Daryl and I were feasting on pizza later that night, Sheila and Tom were having a romantic dinner at Parsnip. I met Sheila this morning at Linway's to get the skinny. "Tell me everything," I demanded after we'd ordered coffee and a selection of half-priced Valentine's Day-themed pastries. "Did he propose?" Sheila shook her head. "He talked a lot about Avery, about the different ways they'd celebrated Valentine's Day over the years before she died." "That wasn't very romantic of him," I complained. "In fact, it sounds kind of depressing." "It was kind of depressing," Sheila agreed, "except that he was so clearly in pain. I finally asked him what was on his mind. I mean, there had to be a reason he'd spent most of dinner telling me stories about how much he loved his deceased wife." So what did he say?
It was almost as if my question shook him awake from a dream. He apologized a million times and then, oh, Marnie, it was awful.
I stared at her. What was awful?
He started crying.
Sheila shook her head, looking as though she might cry herself.
It turns out he's racked with guilt.
Over what?
Over being in love with me, Sheila said, sounding as though she were in pain. That's right. He spent the first hour of dinner reminiscing about Avery and their great marriage, and then he looked at me and said, I love you, and I don't know what to do about it.
I rocked back in my seat.
Whew, that's a lot.
Sheila nodded and sighed.
It is a lot. I told him maybe we ought to take a break, and he agreed, but only if we weren't actually breaking up.
Did you agree? I asked, taking a frosted donut with pink sprinkles from the platter that the waitress had just placed on the table. I mean about not breaking up.
Yeah, Sheila replied, taking a strawberry Danish. But I feel kind of hollowed out. And I feel bad, because the thing is, I love him too.
But you didn't say it, did you?
Sheila took a bite of her Danish. Wow, this is really stale. I think this is definitely a pre-Valentine's Day pastry.
Try a donut, I said, pushing the platter toward her. They're still pretty lively, freshness-wise.
To answer your question, Sheila said as she traded her Danish for a donut, I did not tell Tom Grangerfield that I loved him. I just thought it would seem... I don't know. I didn't think it was the right moment. But now I wonder if it would have made him feel better.
You could send him a postcard, I suggested.
You don't tell someone you love them via postcard.
Sheila rolled her eyes at me.
You and Daryl better not get a divorce because you've lost all of your dating instincts. When was the last time you bought new underwear?
I thought about it, but I couldn't remember.
See?
Sheila sounded as though she'd just scored a major point.
You don't know because you've been married forever, and you don't have to worry about sexy underwear anymore.
But I have sent Daryl a postcard saying that I loved him, I replied defensively.
Because you've been married forever, and sending a sweet postcard to your husband of 100 years is perfectly charming. But in this situation, it would be insane. Can you imagine Tom going through his mail? Mind you, the mail that his assistant has brought in from the mailbox and has already looked over? And finding a postcard for me saying, Dear Tom, I hope this finds you well. Oh, and I love you. Sorry I didn't say it at dinner when you were crying because you miss your dead wife.
Yeah, I see how that could be weird, I admitted.
It would be bananas, stark raving mad.
I handed Sheila her coffee. Honey, have some caffeine. I think it will calm you down. Besides, I know what you should do while you and Tom are taking a little break. Sheila looked at me, her blue eyes wide as a child's.
What?
What do you think?
Make him a quilt, she said, nodding.
By hand, I told her. It will be a labor of love.
Maybe that's what I'll do, she said, breathing in deeply. But this is it, Marn. If this relationship doesn't work out, I am through with men.
It'll work out, I promised. You guys are crazy about each other. But you know what? I just came up with an incredible idea. You should come to QuiltCon with me and Daryl. Kate just texted to say she might stay with friends instead of us at our Airbnb, so we've got a room for you. What do you say?
It would be a tax write-off, Sheila said, and I could use some time away from, well, away from everything, to be honest.
We looked at each other and smiled. It's been a long time since we went on a road trip, I said.
It's been too long, Sheila said. Let's raise heck.
And then we both started laughing so hard that the waitress brought glasses of water just to calm us down.
Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.